Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I've given up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to SBS News.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Tuesday, the 14th of April, 2026, a day where the Australian share market rose, the ASX 200 up 0.5%, despite some news out of Qantas and Westpac about how the Middle East war is impacting their bottom lines. We'll have the details with Scott Haslam. He's the Chief Investment Officer at LGT Wealth Management in a few moments. Plus, we'll go through the new data which shows rental stress is at its highest ever. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. We go into more detail of the top consumer finance and market news stories covered during On The Money on SBS World News. But first, consumers are being warned many businesses will have no choice but to pass on the huge price rises they've experienced to their customers. Two bank surveys, closely watched by the RBA, are pointing to tougher times ahead. The inflationary outlook has seen the Westpac Melbourne Institute Consumer Sentiment Index tumble the most in April since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, while NAB's business survey showed confidence saw its second biggest decline on record as input costs rise significantly. For more, I spoke with NAB Chief Economist Sally Old.
So business confidence fell a lot in the month of March. So it was down 29 points. So that's telling us that businesses are pretty worried about the broader environment in which they're operating. And we did see really big falls in industries such as transport and utilities, construction, and also retail. And so they were really the three industries where the decline in confidence was biggest. But when you think about the sensitivity to shocks to household incomes or the actual cost of doing business, not really surprising to see the biggest impact across those three sectors.
We're not seeing this huge drop translated into conditions, though. Why?
No, that's right. Business conditions held constant in the month. So I guess that was a good sign. And what it tells us is that, they're broadly around their long run average. So it tells you that heading into the conflict, things were looking, reasonably solid in the business sector. However, when you look at the path of those two series, business conditions and business confidence, they don't always move together month to month, but they do broadly align over the course of the cycle. And I think what we've learned from history is that if we sustain this big decline in business confidence that we saw in March, it's probably likely that business conditions are going to follow and decline in coming months as well. And I guess that's part of the reason why, many economists are actually downgrading their growth outlooks for the Australian economy over the rest of this year.
I guess one of the big things we're looking out for with the war is not just the rise in oil prices, but the secondary effects when businesses eventually start passing it on. Is there any evidence of those higher costs being passed on by businesses to consumers at the moment from your report?
Absolutely. And so our business survey basically verifies what we've heard from a lot of our business customers anecdote-wise, which is that the cost of a lot of their supplies are going up and by a lot. So these are not insignificant price rises that our customers are telling us about. And in the business survey, what we saw was purchase costs, which really reflect, the cost of inputs into business, jumped from 1.3% quarterly rate last month to 3%, which is really elevated. And so I think what that would signal to us is that some of these second round price impacts that you referred to are well and truly in train. And I think all else equal, that will cause a little bit of anxiety at the Reserve Bank.
So what does it likely mean for monetary policy?
Really tricky one for monetary policy at the moment, because the nature of an energy price shock, such as the one that we've seen over the past month, is that it basically takes the central bank further away from where it would like to be on both of its mandates. And so what we mean by that is not only does it push inflation up, but as we discussed before, it will slow growth and possibly push up the unemployment rate as well. So it takes the labour market away from full employment. And so that's a really tricky situation when you only have one tool, which is the interest rate. But our view at NAB is that we do think that the bank will hike rates again in May. They are clearly worried that inflation is too high. We saw the deputy governor make those comments earlier today. And they still feel like the economy is close to capacity constraints, which is what our survey suggests as well. And so possibly it feels like maybe one last rate hike in May and then the opportunity really just to sit back and observe how the economy copes with what has been, I think, a reasonably significant shock.
And so can I just clarify just in that second last question about businesses passing on the costs? So you are seeing that happen? I mean, any details where and how significant?
So what we're hearing is that businesses are reporting that their input costs are going up, and that's what the survey is telling us. And then I guess what's really crucial for inflation is the extent to which they get passed on to final prices. That's probably the part of the process that might take a little bit longer. But I think one of the interesting things this time around is that the magnitude of increase in some of these input costs, and that's certainly what our survey reflects as well, is probably such that they're going to be too large in order for firms to absorb them into their margins. And many firms just may have no option except to pass them on to final prices. So we have lifted our core inflation forecast by about 30 basis points over the course of this year, as we do expect a lot of those input cost increases to translate to higher final prices across the board.
That's Sally Old there, the Chief Economist of NAB.
A new SBS music station is coming.
SBS Pop Euro.
Filled with Eurovision hits non-stop.
You want more? Tune in from the 1st of May.
On DAB Radio, online.
The SBS audio app.
And SBS On Demand.
To the Australian share market now, which rose, the ASX 200 up 0.5% to 8,970, driven by tech stocks. And despite news of the hit to earnings, the war in the Middle East will likely have on Australian companies. Qantas is cancelling some domestic flights to mitigate rising costs and will reduce capacity or seats in the sky over the next few months. Those costs are being driven by jet fuel, which the airline has today revised to $3.3 billion in the second half, and that's $800 million more than what was expected earlier this year. Meanwhile, Westpac told the ASX the supply shock from the energy market disruption is expected to result in higher inflation and interest rates, creating a more challenging environment for some customers. So as a result, it's increasing credit provisions to protect it from potential losses from struggling energy-intensive customers. So, is there more to come from corporate Australia? I spoke with Scott Haslam, the Chief Investment Officer of LGT Wealth Management.
There's no doubt this conflict in the Middle East has changed the outlook for both the global economy and for Australia. Just how much it's changed, I think that kind of depends on how long it takes to get the energy supplies coming back through the Straits of Hormuz, particularly for Australia. Oil, and that's really going to impact the extent to which Australia and our companies here face ongoing and potentially escalating cost pressures. And arguably, as we saw today with very low consumer confidence, pressuring consumer spending as well. So we have a fragile ceasefire at the moment. We think that will hold, but even if hostilities do hold, it does seem like it's not necessarily going to be easy flowing through the Straits of Hormuz. So it may take some time for oil prices to come back. And so I think we are probably faced with higher inflation and slower growth, and we're probably a little less relaxed about Australia. We seem quite vulnerable here with both higher interest rates as well as higher energy prices. So things might slow down a little bit more than expected, and our companies might face a few more cost pressures than expected for longer than some other places in the world.
Yeah, that's something Sally Old from NAB just told me about when I spoke to her about the business survey NAB did and how higher input costs are likely to be passed on to consumers, right? So we've got all this negative news. We've got some potential updates from other companies like what we've seen from Qantas and Westpac, yet the share market is climbing both here and in the US. We're only a couple of percentage points away from a record high. Why, despite all this uncertainty?
Well, that's certainly correct. And I think if you're assuming things settle down, it does suggest that the potential for a really sharp equity recovery this year is, say, less than it was around Liberation Day last year, because obviously the markets were down about 20% at the height of Liberation Day, and when there was some sort of resolution, markets kind of rebounded very strongly. Given, as you put it, equity markets aren't off that much as a consequence of all this uncertainty, the potential for a big recovery in equity markets is probably less than it was. Why are they where they are? Well, maybe we're all glass half full and we're sort of looking at the situation and thinking in the Middle East that surely this has to be solved. I think there are also a whole lot of other underlying drivers of company earnings, and notwithstanding that the growth outlook's probably a bit less than we thought it was, there's still a lot of great things to be investing in across AI, CapEx, the enablers, compute, data, networking, cooling, so energy resilience, supply chains. There's lots of things to be investing in. So I do think markets can continue to move higher, but they're just probably not in a position to rebound as strongly as they did last year.
In your latest note, you appear to be increasingly confident that we've passed the peak uncertainty with this conflict. What gives you that confidence?
Well, it's a very good question. We continue to assess these developments through what we call a constraints-based lens, which essentially means we spend less time thinking about what people say or what the protagonists, the leaders in these situations say, and more about what the constraints are that they're kind of faced with. And I think if you go back to last week, we didn't have a ceasefire. We had threats of the annihilation of the Iranian population from Trump. But if you stood back from that, you would recognize that both sides had really significant constraints that would cause them to not cross those red lines. And I guess in the US's case, we know Donald Trump doesn't like falling equity markets. He doesn't like rising bond yields because he's got a lot of debt to pay. And of course, the midterms are coming in November this year. And the evidence or the polls are showing that there's a significant increase of a blue wave coming through, which is that Trump would not only lose the House, but also lose the Senate. So he's really under a lot of pressure to exit the scene. But also, so Iran and Tehran have their constraints. They are obviously being militarily depleted, and they're running out of munitions. They face the risk that the war could evolve from one which is targeting military things to infrastructure and water, and really put the regime under pressure. And most importantly, if we cast our minds back to the 1980s and the tanker wars, Iran would know that eventually the Straits of Hormuz is so important for China and for a whole lot of Gulf countries that eventually everyone's going to turn up and everyone's going to open it. So both sides have constraints. And I think the main message we got out of this ceasefire and where we get some modest level of confidence that it should hold is both sides seem to be recognizing their constraints. And that's the really important thing. They recognize that it's a bad outcome to cross that line. Now, that doesn't mean to say that mistakes aren't made, that sometimes things happen. But based on what we're seeing at the moment, we're not seeing evidence that Trump's putting boots on the ground, or when we've seen military activity pulled back, it seems both sides recognize their constraints, and we think that will hold.
Listening to my interview with Scott Haslam, the Chief Investment Officer of LGT Wealth Management. So even if we do see an imminent end to this conflict, right, we do know that there is an inflation tailwind. Inflation will stay higher for longer. There's the potential for interest rates to rise. So as a result, what are you telling your clients right now? And do you see any opportunities for investors?
Yeah, look, it does appear like we're in a world where growth is going to be a little bit slower than thought, and inflation is potentially going to be a little bit higher. And we've probably moved out of a world where central banks were either on hold and cutting to a world where central banks are more likely to be on hold to lifting a little bit. From a tactical position, we're still fairly constructive. We're still favoring equities over fixed income or bonds, even with the risk that equity markets could deliver a little bit more moderate, potentially quite choppy returns over the rest of the year. But we're only using about 30% of our risk budget. So we're constructive, but only moderately constructive. If we took a more kind of long-term strategic view for portfolios, we're really talking to clients around ensuring that they're not looking to get their equity, that their total return in their portfolio from just equities and equity risk. We're going to need to be more diversified across portfolios if we want them to be resilient. And so that might mean looking at some more defensive fixed income, you can buy Australian government bonds, having exposure to infrastructure that brings inflation protection, and obviously exposure where you can to some unlisted assets. And of course, you know, these periods of expected volatility and dislocation, you want to trust the diversification in your portfolio and hope, and with that diversification giving you that sort of protection. And obviously it's a period of time to also look for opportunities to deploy into some of those themes I talked about in terms of AI, defense spending, energy security. All of these areas are likely to be really strong thematics over the next couple of years. So we're encouraging people to trust the diversification in their portfolios, not to panic and look for opportunities to deploy.
Scott, and before you go, just circling back to that first question, given the updates we heard from these companies, Qantas and Westpac, what about the broader market though? As we approach the next reporting season, do you see there to be pressure on company earnings, perhaps revisions, as a result of the conflict?
I think the extent to which Australian company earnings will be pressured is going to be fundamentally driven by how quickly the war is resolved and how quickly oil prices come back down to levels where they were closer to what they were before the conflict began. Now, we're not particularly optimistic that that's going to happen anytime in the next 6 to 9 months. We think we will be confronted by elevated energy prices in Australia for a while. And if you then combine that with obviously the RBA is feeling challenged by inflation expectations and feels the need to continue to lift interest rates, I think we are going to see, as we move into that August reporting season, we will see companies having to downgrade their earnings a little bit, potentially if they're exposed to consumers. There's also obviously increasing cost pressures coming through that are going to take some time to work through the system. So I do think coming into that February reporting season, we probably are going to see, sorry, the August reporting season, we are going to see a little bit of pressure on company earnings. And I think Australia, in contrast to a number of other places in the world, because we're getting the combination of rising interest rates in conjunction with higher petrol prices and really impacting disposable income of consumers, I think there is a risk, rightly or wrongly, that this economy is going to slow more than people anticipate. And this is why we are a little less sanguine on the Australian outlook and the Australian equity market than we are, say, investing in some of the other regions of the world that look more exceptional, the US, and clearly places like Japan look less unexceptional than they used to. So I think there's probably are some headwinds for Australia coming down the pipe over the next 3 to 6 months, and I expect to see some of that coming through in the August reporting season.
Thanks. That's Scott Haslam there, the Chief Investment Officer of LGT Wealth Management.
SBS Music Station is coming.
SBS Pop Euro.
Filled with Eurovision hits non-stop.
You want more? Tune in from the 1st of May
on DAB Radio, online,
the SBS Audio app
and SBS On Demand.
Let's go to property now. Australian renters are spending a record share, 33% of their gross median household income on housing costs. Nationally, the median rent is nearly $700 a week. While Sydney remains the most expensive rental market for the capitals, Darwin recorded the largest annual growth of any capital, Canberra the slowest. Catality says a chronic shortage of available properties is worsening the problem. For more, I spoke with Catality's head of research, Jared Berg. Firstly, how dire is the situation for renters?
Yeah, when we look across the country, around about one third of household income was going to servicing rent in the December quarter. That's compared with a long-term average around 29%. And we saw higher rates in Adelaide, Sydney and Perth. That's sitting at a record high. And when we look at the trend that we've seen in terms of rents since that point in December, it's really only going to have gone higher since that time.
Run us through why we are seeing these record costs for renters.
Across the country, vacancy rates are remaining incredibly low. They're sitting at about 1.6% nationally. And the total number of rental properties that are available right now is well below the five-year average, sitting around about 18% below that level. So it's a really tight market. We've got a lot of competition for renters to find available properties.
What does it say about how investors and landlords, though, are coping if these rents are high? Is it a factor of them having it push it higher because their interest repayments, for example, are rising too?
I mean, that's certainly been the case more recently with the two rate hikes that we've seen from the Reserve Bank. But it probably depends a lot about when they entered the market. If they've been a near-term entrant, they would have seen obviously a very high buy-in point and feeling that pain from those rate rises. For investors who have been sitting in the market for a long time, they've really benefited in most markets from very strong capital growth over this time and probably don't have the scale of repayments. So it really depends on that sort of entry point.
I guess the other $64 million question is, how do you fix it?
Yeah, it's really a complicated problem. It largely comes down to just being able to expand the supply, but that, of course, is much easier said than done. We've seen construction costs around the country have really remained very elevated. Huge problem really sits in the availability of labour. And when we look even over the next couple of years, the draw of labour going to Brisbane to help facilitate the Olympics in 2032... that's really going to cause some challenges on the labour front. So addressing this isn't going to be easy, but we look at things like if we can try and expand that pool of labour, if we can do something to address some of the costs. And then there's the regulatory side of the sector too. So, within individual markets around the country, allowing projects that can go ahead that can expand the availability of affordable supply really is something that needs to be looked at.
So what's your message to both investors and to renters in this environment?
Well, overall, the housing market, I guess, really remains quite uncertain. The pressure is still likely to remain there in the short term. For the renters, it's searching for affordability. We're already seeing a lot of migration out of the cities into regional areas and that search for affordability. And I guess for those investors who are sort of, facing the burden of high costs, it's a very uncertain environment heading forward. We do see the prospect of further rate hikes that are going to add some pressure in the near term.
That's Gerard Berg there from NAB, and he wraps up the podcast for this Tuesday. Give it a like, a review, and subscribe if you do enjoy it. And don't forget to watch SBS World News and the On the Money segment on SBS at 6:30. The podcast returns tomorrow. It drops straight after the market close, and I'll see you then.
A new SBS music station is coming.
SBS Pop Euro.
Filled with Eurovision hits non-stop.
You want more? Tune in from the 1st of May.
On DAB Radio, online.
The SBS Audio app.
And SBS On Demand.